Hello, everyone. This is Belinda from the podcast Michael Jackson and the Truth Podcast. Today's day is March the 5th, 2024. This is, yes, the first episode of the new year. And I was supposed to do this episode in February, but life goes on. Life happens, so I didn't get a chance to do it. Today's episode is entitled Episode 30, Reaction / Review of the Greatest Night of Pop Music. I'm sorry, The Greatest Night of Pop, The Biopic News, The Super Bowl, and other things of that matter. I apologize. Excuse me. This episode is about my reaction to The Greatest Night of Pop documentary, MJ Biopic News, the 2024 Grammys, and Usher Super Bowl performance. The best way to listen to this podcast is on Apple, Spotify, and Google Podcasts. The website to the podcast is michaelandthetruthpodcast.blogspot.com. My email is, when you want to email me, is mjthetruthpodcast@outlook.com. As always, anytime I do an episode, I now read a fair use statement. Sometimes I might play some audio during the episode. I don't believe I will play some audio during this episode, but I will be reading something from a book, so I will have to use this statement. And it goes, this site / podcast contains original content that may not be authorized by the use of the creator. The podcaster is legally using original content under the fair use principles. And here's a link to section 107 of the Copyright Act. So I post a link on the show notes, and you will also see that same statement when I post a description on the podcast. So let's start off with the episode. Okay, so January 29, 2024, Netflix decided premiered worldwide a documentary all about We Are the World. And the documentary is called The Greatest Night of Pop. Now, I saw the trailer for it. I believe I saw it on Instagram or Facebook, one of them. And when I saw the trailer, I was like, whoa, I'm totally seeing this. Now, I posted links on the show notes regarding more info if you want to know more about the documentary, The Secret Weapon, and the situation regarding singer Prince. I suggest you to read those articles to have a better understanding of the documentary if you have not seen it yet. Because I have seen the documentary, I will state spoilers. If you have not seen the documentary, my suggestion is to get a Netflix account and see the documentary. Netflix is not free. They don't do free trials. You have to pay for it. It's not expensive, but it's worldwide in Netflix. Unlike Thriller 40, when you had to get this and that to get to see it, Netflix is worldwide, so you can just go get a Netflix account, watch it. I mean, pay for it, of course. Watch it and then enjoy it. I watched the documentary twice. Okay, now this is my reaction. I thought the documentary was fantastic. 10 out of 10. Probably one of the best documentaries I've seen in years. And I was happy that the documentary dealing with Michael was about the music and not the nonsense. That's how all documentaries of Michael should be. The truth, okay? The documentary pretty much is about one night in pop music that these artists came together to do a charity song about the famine that was going on in Ethiopia in the 80s, particularly 1984, 1985. It was so bad that it was literally wiping out a country. And Harry Belafonte, okay, this was originally the idea of a gentleman by the name of Sir Bob Geldof, from the UK. I'm assuming he's a music exec or was. I don't know if he's that anymore. He became aware of the horrible famine going on in Ethiopia and wanted to do something about it. So he decided to get the London UK performers to sing about it, to do a song about it called Band Aid, okay? And that was done in 1984. That was pretty popular in the UK. So the American version is We Are the World. And Harry Belafonte, the late great Harry Belafonte, an American icon, a singer. He was a singer and actor, extremely one of the biggest influences in Black Hollywood, just Hollywood period. Just a true king. This man went to Ethiopia, saw the horror that was going on there, and said, "We have to do something." And in the documentary, he talks about how he said it's weird to see. It's not right to see white people saving black people and black people aren't saving black people. And that was it. You know, Harry Belafonte was very good friends with Quincy Jones. And he knew Lionel Richie's now late manager, Ken. His name is Ken. And he went to Ken and told him, Ken Krager, I think that's his name, and told him, you need to find a way to get these artists to, you know, we have to do something about this famine. So he got Lionel Richie involved. At the time, you know, Lionel Richie was a huge, and so is, but was a huge pop star. He was so popular, he was hosting the American Music Awards. He had hosted the American Music Awards in 84, and then this year, and not this year, but that, then following year, 85. He hosted it, he performed twice, and he swept the award shows. He won 6 of them. And at the same time as hosting the award shows, he also had to go start doing the We Are the World, setting that up, We Are the World thing, studio thing. So he had to do that, and that's what the documentary is all about, how this all came together. Harry Belafonte was pretty much, if you watch the documentary, was fantastic. He was a superhero. While the American Music Awards was going on, Lionel Richie was hosting it. They were in the A&M music studio. Quincy was there. The first artist that was there was, of course, our beautiful and wonderful Michael, who just did his Michael stuff. And the documentary just showed you Michael created genius. I mean, Michael pretty much shined in the documentary. He was the documentary, in my opinion. I'm just saying that not because I'm a fan, but also because he really was. The one thing that I noticed in this, and this is why, you know, when people say, well, can this happen again? Can this happen again in this era? I said, no. Michael was the biggest star ever in that time period. And everybody else was big stars too. Everybody was winning at the same time. Everybody had hit tours and albums and careers. Everybody was winning, and yet he could still be number one. Everybody was good with it. Everybody was fair with it. Nobody was hating. Everybody was okay with it. You know what I'm saying? It's not, you know, they accepted it, and because everybody was winning. So I noticed that too with that, with seeing that. It's not like that now, because we know why. The documentary also gets into how they first recorded the group song, how they all came together to sing the chorus. Then it gets into how the arranger, this is Tom Baylor. Tom Baylor is the arranger. How he arranged the vocals, the solo parts based on how they sang. He talks about that in the documentary, okay? Tom Baylor does another interview where he talks about it in length in various interviews. Okay, so my suggestion is if you are interested, go on YouTube and watch his interviews. Also read the Rolling Stone article. I don't like those people, but anyway, they did an article with him called The Secret Weapon where they interview him and he talks about it. Okay, that's when the gentleman and Mr. Baylor talks about it on that article. Now, the documentary talks about that. The documentary talks about Prince, the singer Prince, how they try to get him to come into the studio to record. Now, Lionel says they were trying to get him to come, but when he found out he had to sing that to Michael, he said no. Sheila E. tried to get him to come. She said she felt she was being used. Now, she said in the article, she forgot all about it until she did the documentary, and then she realized how upset, well, it bothered her because she felt like she's being used. In the Pew Magazine article, she breaks down what happened. So basically, she said that they were just coming off tour. They did all these events the whole year, and they were just kind of like over it. So they just wanted to not really dwell on it too much. That's why, okay. But Prince did offer a song in the album. There is an album of We Are the World. He offered his song. He also said he wanted to do a solo, but they said no, you can't do that. So Prince also wasn't interested. So all those stories are true. Prince fans were not too happy that he was treated like that, but you know, they need to get over it. And so does Madonna fans. The manager, Lana Richie's manager, Ken, did not want Madonna on the air. It's nothing to do with Michael Jackson. Michael Jackson wrote the song and sang the song. He didn't make the decision who needs to be on the air. Ken did not want her on the air. And Madonna fans need to get over it. Now, Lana Richie has later on said that he wished Madonna was on there. He regrets that she was not on there. I personally think that his manager was correct. Maybe Madonna didn't care. Maybe she didn't. It doesn't matter. She had no business being on there. The people they had on there were the correct people. Michael told Quincy he originally did not want to be in the video or the song. He will write the song, but he didn't want to sing it. He didn't want to be in it because in the video, because of overexposure. And Quincy convinced Michael, no, you have to be on here, because if you don't, this is going to be one of the biggest mistakes of your career. And I agree with Quincy on that, because it led Michael to do more of those type of songs that he's also known for. Man in the Mirror, Earth Song, Heal the World. You know, songs that deal with humanitarian issues. So, that. It shows you also in the documentary how the video and the song was made. They recorded the song while doing the video at the same time, which was, they don't really do that. But that's how they wanted to get this song done on that day, on that night. Okay. So it was interesting to see that going on there. Another thing I want to, the viral clip of when Michael sings his part perfectly on pitch, fantastically, and then after him comes the singer Huey Lewis, and then Cyndi Lauper, and then Kim Carnes. Now each of them, they have their own unique voices. They're, you know, I think Huey Lewis is a good singer. They have their own unique voices, so you know, it's not gonna sound perfect like Michael's. People thought that Michael had his facial expression. He was a little pissed off when he heard Huey Lewis sing, but it wasn't like that. In the documentary, it breaks down why that was going on. Everybody was like pinning needles because Huey wanted to make sure the song was sang right, was sung right. Then when it came to Cyndi Lauper, she had trouble with the song. You know, she kind of had trouble with the song. She sang it, and they thought she did a good job, but then they kept hearing something going on. Turns out it was her jewelry. Her jewelry was making some unusual noises, so they told her to take it off and then hear it, and she sang it again, and the sound was gone. So just little things like that. The documentary also goes into how the song made an impact throughout the world. 3 months after that recording and the music video was recorded, the song was released, and at the same time was released on certain radio stations all over the world. At the same time, the song was released, which was unheard of then. And it did what it was supposed to do. The video was released. It was one of the biggest songs of that. It was the biggest song of 1985. The following year, the American Music Awards and the Grammys. It was Record of the Year, Song of the Year. It did what it was supposed to do. The song raised money to help people, the people in Ethiopia, save that country from complete despair, and the country striving, and it changed, it pretty much in a way changed the world. It changed the way people do charity songs. They say, oh, I can do this, that they can make music that can actually save people from famines and all that kind of stuff. So Live Aid and global citizenship later on down a line. So many Farm Aid. That's where these songs, this type of format started to happen after We Are the World. Okay. The documentary is a must-watch for all music fans. If you love music, if you love how music is done, that's the documentary you need to watch. It's still on Netflix. It's doing very well on Netflix, extremely well, and it's a must-watch. And I just got a screen capture of it on the show notes. Number one on Netflix. This is probably okay. I'm sorry. Let me just see what this looks like. Hold on. Sorry, y'all. Just gonna see what it what this image looks like. Okay. Well, it's a top 10 documentary in English. Number one. Now I'm gonna read to you some stuff. Between January 29th and February 4th, the English films The Greatest Night of Pop was number one. With at the time 11.9 million views. It is now, last time I checked, it's now over 400 million views. So it's doing what it's supposed to do. Now, the impact the song has made is what I want to read. Somebody on YouTube posted something. I'm sorry, give me a minute. Let me get there. Okay. And this person talks about they only focus on Michael, where they come from, because yes, they have big stars there. But this is what the person said: I can tell you as someone outside America, this might have been a cavalcade of superstars, but we only knew Michael Jackson, and this song was a success because of him. Those of us in the third world, we knew him not only for his music, but his noble heart, and he represented hope to us. That's there is still goodness in humanity. He was looked on like a savior because he used his fame to help people, like the genocide victims of Bosnia, when he sent planes of humanitarian aid with his own money. He was very powerful, and he used that power to help people. Rest in peace, Mr. Jackson. That is true. It really changed the way people saw him too. And he started to really look into what he can do to help, and he did more than help. On the Billboard charts, because of the popularity of the documentary, the song USA for Africa, We Are the World, went up the charts and was at number 21 on the charts. So it just kept doing well in the week that debuted. It was just, you know, killing it with the numbers. Okay. And then someone who benefited from We Are the World talks about it. He stated this after Michael passed on. He said, I will never forget Michael Jackson because his contribution to the song We Are the World had a very significant effect on my life. I am 50 now, but 25 years ago, I was living in Addis Ababa, Ethiopia, which at the time was suffering from a long drought and famine. It was a terrible situation. Lots of people became sick and many more died. Around 1 million people in all were killed by the famine. In 1985, Michael Jackson, along with a number of other leading musicians, made this song We Are the World to raise money for Africa. We received a lot of aid from the world, and I was one of those who directly benefited from it. The wheat flour that was distributed to the famine victims was different to the usual cereal we brought at the market. We baked a special bread from it. The local people named the bread after the great artist, and it became known as Michael Bread. It was soft and delicious. When you have been through so much hard times, you never forget events like this. If you speak to anyone who was in Addis Ababa at the time, they will all know what Michael Bread is, and I know I will remember it for the rest of my life. That is deep. You know, that's something you can never ignore, something like that. Now, Michael, in his Moonwalker book, also, I didn't post this on the show notes, but there's a demo. Yes, there is a demo of Reader where I posted on the show notes, but also, Michael did he had got sued, and what do they call that? Depositions. He did a court deposition court deposition where he talked about how he composed We Are the World. And take the time to listen to it, because it's long, but take the time to listen to it when you get a chance. I got the Moonwalk book, so I'm going to read to you pages 261 and 263 of how what Michael felt about We Are the World. In early 1985, we cut We Are the World at an all-night, all-star recording session that was held after the ceremony for the American Music Awards. I wrote this song with Lionel Richie after seeing the appalling news footage of starving people in Ethiopia and in Sudan. Around that time, I used to ask my sister Janet to follow me into a room with interesting autistics, like a closet or a bathroom, and I would sing to her just a note, a rhythm, or of a note. And it wouldn't be a lyric or anything. I would just hum from the bottom of my throat. I say, Janet, what do you see when you see... Okay, what do you see when you hear this sound? At this time, and this time she said, dying children of Africa. You're right. That's what I was dictating from my soul. And she said, you're talking about Africa. You're talking about dying children. That's where We Are the World came from. We'll go in a dark room and I will sing notes to her. To my mind, that's what singers should be able to do. We should be able to perform and be effective, even if it's in a dark room. We lost a lot because of television. You should be able to move people without all that advanced technology, without pitching, using only sound. I've been performing as long as I can remember. I know a lot of secrets, a lot of things like that. I think that We Are the World is a very spiritual song. But spiritual in a special sense. I was proud to be part of that song and be one of the musicians there that night. We were united by our desire to make a difference and make the world a better place for us, and it made a difference in the starving people we wanted to help. We collected some Grammy Awards and began to hear easy listening versions of We Are the World in elevators along with Billie Jean. Since first writing, I had thought that that song would be sung by children. When I finally heard children singing it on producer George Duke's version, I almost cried. It's the best version I've heard. Okay, so that's it. So, yes, children do sing that song. Kindergarten children sing it. There are people who have grew up, who are grown, who have stated that they sang that song when they were children. So, yeah. We're also going to compare Thriller 40 to The Greatest Hits of Pop. So, directors. Nelson George directed Thriller 40. And Bio Nguyen directed The Greatest Hits of Pop. Okay? Nelson George didn't really promote Thriller 40. But Bio Nguyen went everywhere with Thriller 40. Sundance. It was promoted Inside Edition, Entertainment Tonight, SS Hollywood, SS Daily. Where else? Lionel Richie was everywhere promoting it. He just recently did an interview with Kelly Ripa and her husband, Mark Criswellos. Their talk show, Kelly and Mark. He talked about it. It was everywhere. Not just what they said, is other people who've seen it. The people who said were checking it out on Netflix. People talking about it on the shows and online. People talking about it on social media, doing reviews and stuff like that. So everybody, based on their everybody who's seen it, did promoted it themselves and told people to watch it, and did very well. It trended on Twitter. It did very well. It did extremely well. It did better than Thriller 40. Nguyen did not want the mainstream media to dwell on the nonsense regarding Michael, more like the lies, but instead focused on Michael's genius. So he did an interview, I think it's from the Associated Press or one of them, and somebody's bringing up some nonsense, and he just said, no, this documentary is not about, he pretty much said, this documentary is not about that. It's about what he brought to the table, what he did, what was his impact, and the documentary shows that, and the documentary did show that, and on that 1 minute, people saw the genius. They didn't see the make-believe science fiction garbage that is out there that they created on him. They saw, the media created on him. They saw the genius. Even when this stupid show, Inside Edition, talked about We Are the World, they didn't bring up the nonsense. They were actually nice. It was weird, you know. Sorry about that. I had to drink some water. So, Nelson George whenever he tries to talk about Michael, he always makes sure to bash him. So, not during, well, he didn't promote Thriller 40 at all. So, but if he had given a chance to even talk about Michael, he'll trash him. The documentary was seen everywhere, meaning The Grey's Anatomy Pot was seen everywhere, and people did not have trouble accessing the documentary. But that's not the same for Thriller 40. People had some trouble accessing Thriller 40. It was not promoted. It wasn't everywhere. I wouldn't be surprised if there are people out there who still have not seen Thriller 40. So, that's pretty much it with that. Please check it out when you get a chance. It's one of the best documentaries ever done. Well, really, it's not all. It's not a Michael documentary. It features Michael, but it's one of the best done on topics dealing with social solutions, such as find ways to cure the famine and all that stuff. Okay, and please, excuse me, take the time to watch these things. Excuse me, and things happen. To watch the documentary, and you will love it. Okay. The next topic I want to talk about is the MJ biopic news. It's been a lot of updates since, since this year began. January 22nd, they started filming the document. The biopic is filming right now. Jafar is playing, of course, Michael. Plenty of pictures out there. Jafar being his uncle. So let's get into it. They cast a young Michael. The gentleman, young boy that's playing Michael, is light skinned. Okay, a lot of people didn't really understand that, but Joe Jackson is going to be played by Coleman Domingo. Now, here's what's crazy about this. When I first saw this, I'm not gonna lie, I was on Instagram, and Michael's son Prince. I follow him on Instagram. He has a, you know, on Instagram, you have IG Live, or IG, what's that thing? I was just on there today. What is it called? When you go, IG, you know how you, I just had it. Let's say, it's not live, because he was not live. He just posted it on Stories. IG Stories. And when I saw this man's face, I'm not going to lie, I screamed. I screamed in horror, because he's the last person I would ever think of playing someone like Joe Jackson. And people will say, is it because in real life, the gentleman who's playing Joe Jackson is homosexual, and Joe Jackson was not homosexual, and rumor has it he was homophobe. No, it has nothing to do with the actor's sexual business. It has to do, or preference, I should say. It has to do with, I cannot see him be Joe Jackson. His face is too soft. He seems pretty nice. He doesn't seem, you know, menacing. And no offense to Joe, it's not to trash Joe, but Joe do seem, made Mr. Jackson rest in peace, he do seem menacing. However, I didn't think Coleman was the right person for him. He's not him. But then you have to understand, actors have range. And I didn't, that's not what came to me. I was just like, can they get the original Joe Jackson from the 1992 movie? I mean, he might still have it in him. But no, they're not. And then I said, okay, fine. I have to be convinced that he's going to play this role. Then I saw the picture of him trying to look like Joe Jackson. I said, okay, I see it now. I think I can see it now. So I let that go. Nia Long is going to play Katherine Jackson. Okay, to be fair, Nia Long now is in her 50s, so it makes sense. I that was another one I couldn't see, even though she's a good actress. I don't know. I mean, maybe that's it because, I would thought it would be like Viola Davis or even Angela Bassett again. But, okay, it works because she do kind of resemble Catherine. And it works. She's petite like Catherine. So it works. There's a clip of her with Jafar and they're doing a scene together. It works. It works. I see it now. And I posted a link on the show notes of an article from Pew Magazine that talks about the casting. They also casted the brothers, the gentlemen who are going to play Michael's brothers in the movie, except Randy. Randy is not cast, which is odd, because Michael had five brothers. So we'll see what happens with that. Also, rumor has a casting children that might be, that they do look white, that might be playing Michael's kids. Alright, well, you know, hey. Miles Teller is going to play our buddy, and I don't mean that in a nice way, our quote-unquote buddy, John Branca. John Branca made sure he going to play, he going to get somebody good-looking to play him. Yeah, I can see that. I can see that. It makes sense. Mako will make a difference with Marcel. He's going to look like him. I have nothing nice to say about John Branca, so moving on. Rumor has it, a actress, Haley Steinfeld, might play Brooke Shields. She do kind of look like her. I didn't even realize it until I saw a younger picture of Brooke Shields and then Haley Steinfeld, and I said, okay. But there's no evidence, no confirmation. Also, there's rumors out there of Halle Bailey, the young lady who played Little Mermaid, the live action Little Mermaid, to play Janet Jackson, because there are people who think that she resembles Janet Jackson. I kind of don't see it, but all right. I don't know. I want to get back to Joe Jackson for a minute. When it was announced that Coleman Domingo was going to play Joe Jackson, MJ fans decided, okay, let's go lynch this guy. Meaning, let's go attack Joe. Joe was this villain. He was an abuser. He was this. He was that. I'm going to be honest with y'all, and y'all ain't going to like what to say. Joe was not a villain. Joe was not remotely a villain. I think people don't understand what a villain means. Joseph was always there for Michael. Joseph always defended Michael, literally. And I don't remember a time he didn't defend his son. Joseph. Sorry. Joseph was a difficult person to understand. You're not going to make sense out of someone like Joseph. So don't bother. It's time for fans to grow up. It's time for fans to get over it. Sorry, but he came, he did what he's supposed to do, and he was time to go when he was time to go. And in his time he was here, he ran his house the way he ran his house. Do I agree with a lot of stuff he did? No. But last time I checked, stay mad when I say it, Michael forgave his dad. Now, people might say, well, that don't mean anything. Well, to you, it might not mean anything. But that's all people want to hear. What do you want us to say? Michael should hate his dad because his dad beat him? If Joseph did wrong by his kids, he lived with that, right? God will handle him as he fit. Alright. There were things that Joseph did to his kids and said to his kids that was foul. We could all agree. We're not going to ever defend. I'm not here to defend the guy. I'm here to pretty much say MJ fans need to make peace with this and move on. But calling him a villain when he didn't steal from his son, he didn't destroy his son's life, he let his son have his dreams. And there are a lot of people out there that will tell you there are parents that never supported their children or anything. He was supporting his kids and what they wanted to do. A lot of people don't know that Michael always wanted to be a singer. It wasn't like, oh, Joseph forced them. No. Michael always wanted to be a singer, and Joseph supported him. Joseph looked out for him. Joseph, and Michael said it himself. Joseph taught him the business. You know? Now, they have not seen eye to eye things? Okay. Okay. But what are we going to do about it? So, I think it's time for MJ fans to make peace with this issue with Joe Jackson and get over it. Now, in the process, everybody's talking about the biopic and what it's going to be. I made it very clear. I believe that, you know, this biopic is going to do very well. No, it's not going to vindicate Michael because everything it will is the Lulu. It's the Lulu. Stop, let me stop. They don't get it, okay? I'm not going to say you're delusional for saying that. You have wishful thinking. You have a right to have wishful thinking. But no, the movie, biopics do not vindicate people. Michael Jackson was vindicated in 2005. If you cannot accept that, that's their problem, not yours. He's been cleared already. The only way people are going to accept that this happened to him, that this, what he's been through happened to him, they got to do their own research. The biopic... Sorry, should not talk about the allegations, in my opinion, until it showed that he was framed. And how, and who, not just how, but who framed him. That's the key. See, if you go into what really, who really put him there, it's going to start some stuff, and it's going to confirm a lot of things. But no, I know they're not going to do that. I know they're not going to do that. You know why they're not going to do that? Because a lot of people going to get mad. And that's the last thing Branken wants, is people get mad. So guess what I think they're going to do? When it comes, because they're going to talk about it. When it comes to that part, they're going to make Michael out to be Peter effing Pan or Mickey Mouse, a whole character. Paint him out to be crying about not having a childhood, crying about not getting this and that, like they did with him in the play. Make Joe Jackson out to be a horrible, disgusting human being. Not the guy that mentored this man, besides Barry Gordy and others. But they're going to paint Michael out to be an aloof idiot. And say that he didn't see this coming, or he didn't, you know, he didn't understand people do what they do to him. I'm not buying it. They're going to paint a certain way. That's gonna portray him as a cartoon character. That's my theory. I don't know. I hope not, but they are. They're not. They're gonna shy away. Who really framed him and why? I hope they don't do that. But I have no faith in John Branca. So they're going to do that, and then they're gonna use John Branca as the savior to get Michael out of the mess he's in. That they put him in, by the way, because I will never believe Michael ever wanted to be crazy enough to go be framed. No, they put him in that mess. And John Burke gonna put his imaginary cape on and go save Michael from these people or the mess he put him in, and say, oh, do this and do that. Trust, that's what's gonna happen. And y'all fans gonna be mad, because I feel the biopic is gonna make John Burke look fantastic. And also, the biopic need to show that Michael fired that fool 3 times. The biopic needed to show that Mike was an insomniac, not a drug addict. Mike was poisoned, okay? Not a willing drug addict. Michael's kids should not be played by white people. They should be played by biracial people who are white passing. Find them. But that's not going to happen. They had to show Michael being in relationship with black women. Romantic relationships with black women. I'm telling you right now, that's not going to happen. They're going to paint Michael out to be Lisa Marie is the only woman they ever loved. Trust me. Because John Branca was the main one making sure Michael was dating that woman. You don't want to hear that, but he was very, very tight with Priscilla. And also, Branca was a huge Elvis Presley fan. Is a huge Elvis Presley fan. So yeah, Branca's going to paint Michael out to be the Michael he thinks Michael was. He's not going to show the true Michael in that movie. Y'all can get mad all you want to, but I'm telling you. And these old Branca's just exactly had nothing to do with that. You are a fool. Graham King wouldn't even come to Gary, Indiana and interview people that knew the real stories. He hasn't stepped foot. He didn't talk to none of those people. Those people are still living. He hasn't talked to none of these people. If you think Graham King or anybody in that movie talked to Catherine about her son, you are a fool. And yes, I do believe the brothers are involved. They said so themselves. I do believe they have talked to Graham King, still talk to Graham King. But I'll be honest with you, they're going to tell you they're going to say their version of the story. Okay, Michael's not living, so they're going to rely on his son. His son knows what his father told him. you want to get the true Michael, so you got to talk to people that knew him. How is this going to work? How long will the biopic be? Will it be 3 hours? Will it be 2 hours? Who knows? And so that's the thing. The biopic, in my opinion, is going to help Jafar with his music career, his entertainment career, really. Jafar don't really need this because he can have a very strong and can have a very strong music career because he's a good singer. He just need to get some good producers, all that. It could work. But my feeling is, and I said this before and I'll say it again, they're doing this with Miles Falls. They're replacing Michael. They're going to replace Michael with Jafar. They're going to replace Michael with Jafar. Jafar looks like is the only one I feel that resembles Michael. Jafar is as tall as Michael. Jafar is a relative of Michael's, his nephew. Jafar has a fantastic image. He's good looking. I mean, he's everything. He reminds people of the off-the-wall era of Michael, where people think that Michael's life was great. And it wasn't, because he dealt with a lot of loneliness. But people go and think what they want. Michael is loved. We love him very much. But a lot of people feel like once he became a bigger star, he started to alienate himself from his original fan base, which is the black community, and move on to others. Well, a lot of artists do that. But they come back as they should. And Michael came back and always came back many times. People get fixated by skin color. There's nothing I can do about that. We know Michael was black. Michael loved to be black. But I think with Jafar, when they see Jafar, they see, oh, this is what Michael could have looked like if he didn't have this issue with his skin disorder. And they hold on to that. And they want to promote him that way. Also, he'll want another Michael. They want the next Michael because they miss out on when he was here or they were not alive when he was doing his thing. Or even when he was here, they were not alive. They want to know what it feels like to witness something as great as Michael. And if they can get the nephew, even better. Even though he has none of Michael's charisma, none of Michael's uber talent, even though he is a talented man himself, he doesn't have the Michael-ness at all. None of the Jacksons do. Only Michael has it. And people gotta understand, it's not meant for you, it's not meant for you. If you were lucky, like myself, to be born in the 80s and have 25 years of your life witnessing such a, at that time, because he passed when I was 25, and witness that greatness is a blessing in itself. So you take that blessing and you go with it, okay? We all wish Michael was here. We all wish Michael was alive to tell his story. Unfortunately, the only way his story be told properly is not through a biopic. It's going to be through a documentary. And the reason why I said that is because, biopics are movies. Biopics are entertainment. It's not always true. It's based on a true story or it's exaggeration of the truth. And to be so naive and think, oh yeah, well the movie's gonna do right by Michael, it's dangerous. Michael was vindicated already. Stop letting people let you think that Michael need to be vindicated every time some clown come up with some science fiction story about Michael did this and that to them, when Michael isn't capable of hitting himself, let him know another person. Isn't capable of harming anyone himself, let alone harming another person. These people keep on bringing up nonsense and making you feel like we gotta vindicate him again with this. I'm not doing all that. Michael was handled already. I mean, he was vindicated already. The truth will come out anyway, and it's happening now. That is more interesting to me than any biopic could ever do on this guy. But it's done. It's going on. And do what you gotta do with the biopic. Now, in the wake of these biopics, there have been previous ones after the Jackson movie from 1992. And way before the biopic, we have a stupid movie called this Man in the Mirror, done by, it was aired originally on VH1, an actor named Flex Alexander, who was married to singer Shanice Wilson, who is one of, she's known for singing the song, I Love Your Smile from the 90s. She's best, very good friends with Michael's family members, Michael's nephew, Ziggy, and daughter, and niece, I'm sorry, nephew, Ziggy, and niece, Brandy. Because Jackie Jackson is friends with John McClane. John McClane's one of his best friends. John McClane founded Shanice. So, and that's how they met. Anyway, her husband played Michael Jackson, meaning Shanice's husband, Flex Angel, played Michael Jackson in a movie called Man in the Mirror that was released in 2004. The movie was horrific. It's horribly done. And people keep posting in, and they bring it up all the time with Flex Alexander, and he tried to make it clear, look, I did the best I could. I wanted to honor him. And I said to myself, you didn't honor Michael. You mocked that guy. You entertained the idea of playing a man that was at the time dealing with serious legal stuff, that was being lied on every single day, being mocked every single day, being made fun of. And the last thing you need to be doing is joining that. And you did the movie knowing that your wife was friends with members of that man's family. And you could have said, you know what, I'm not going to do it. But the check was more important. Okay? At that time, he had a comedy show, probably have had canceled by that time, called One on One. I refuse to watch that show. Every time I see Flex Alexander, I think of him, Monkey Michael. I have no respect for that guy. Or his wife. Because his wife did a recent interview with that Questlove character. And she pretty much said that she supported her husband in the movie. She thought he did a good job. Yeah, you tell that to Michael's family members who you're friends with. Oh, wait, that's right. LaToya was the one, according to Flex, who told him that he did a good job mocking her brother. Yes, she really did say that. Now, in 2004, Michael found out about this stupid movie and he released a statement. Oh, you didn't know that? I'll tell you. Michael just wrote a statement about the movie. It was dated August 10th, 2004. 20 years ago. Man in the Mirror on August the 10th, but did not air until August the 16th after it was approved by Judge Rodney Melville, who oversees Jackson's upcoming trial. Now, at that time, the judge, Rodney Melville, put a gag order. So anytime Michael released a statement, he had to get it approved by this horrible man. This is what Michael said. My family and I have dedicated our lives to spreading unity and peace in the world through our music. The most recent unauthorized version of my life story, Man in the Mirror, in no way represents what we are as a family. It is unfortunate that for years we have been a subject of totally inaccurate and false representations. We've seen how we've been vilified and humiliated. I have personally suffered from the many lies and offensive references as Wacko Jacko, as well as the latest lie about me being paired with quadruplets. Oh, I remember that nonsense. This is intolerable and it must end. Public representation of us is not who we are. We are a loving family. My success on stage can be also attributed to the love and support of my family off stage. My siblings and I are brothers, and we started together, and we will be together forever. All I can hope for one day, my family will see the same kindness and respect that we have shown each other throughout our lives. And pretty much said the movie is bull. It's not true. It didn't happen. He said it was false and inaccurate, and it's sad. It's a mockery of that man, and seeing clips of it, people are saying, oh, this is terrible, and it's a terrible movie. Seeing clips of it, I just get angry. Why would you put yourself through all that? Why would you paint your face like that? Why would you're too Oakley and tall to play him. Why would you do that? And you knew in your heart, I was just trying to do right for you. You're not that good of an actor to even play him. Come on. I don't believe him. I think, honestly, the man needed money and did not care. Like, it was cool to mock Michael. Now everybody remember they a fan and want to defend him. They clowning the dude on social media every time he comes on. And he be like, yo, I did my best. No, keep it real with yourself. You mocked that dude, and you should have never have done that. Then people will take you seriously. But screw you in that movie. Then Searching for Neverland. That's another stupid movie. Fan people need to stop watching it. That shit never happened. Mike Garcia, one of the bodyguards, because there were three. Now it's two. He released a statement regarding that movie, and this is what he said. Just watch a scene from the new Michael Jackson movie that never happened. The movie is false, is nothing more than but greed. Those two should be ashamed of themselves. And literally just yesterday, I found out some information. I'm not going to reveal it on here simply because it has nothing to do with this topic, but it hit me after reading that. I've always believed that Searching for Neverland, which is based on the Bodyguard's book, Remember the Time, was a bunch of lies. Like, the book is a bunch of lies. That movie should have never have happened. Next topic, the 2024 Grammys. It was one of the lowest award shows ever. Now, why are we talking about this useless Grammys? Because 40 years ago, Michael swept the Grammys when he won 8 Grammys in one night. And that was in 1984. And 51 million people watched Michael make history. Right? One of the greatest TV moments of all time, right? And, you know, they want to say this Taylor Swift girl is up there with him. Go sweep the Grammys and get over 30 million people to watch you do that. Then we can talk. Oh, wait. That didn't happen. Lionel Richie was on there. He mentioned Michael. Michael's distant cousin, Tracy Chapman, was on there. She performed, and that was one of the biggest highlights of the show. Michael's child was on there. I don't know what she was on. Nobody cares. But overall, the Grammys was bad. I didn't watch any of it, but you know what I mean. There's an article I posted where it talks about the Grammys. You can read it for yourself. The Michael being mentioned on there. And the last topic is Usher's Super Bowl performance. Now, Usher, I'm talking about him. He's one of my favorite artists. He was heavily influenced by Michael, as we know. Heavily inspired by him. Pretty much one of his musical heirs. Usher, I thought the Super Performance, I thought he did fantastic. I thought it was one of his best. Usher, when I count down the best Super Performance I've ever seen, of course, number one is going to be Michael Jackson. Number two, it was Prince. Now it's moved to number three. And guess what I put number two? Usher. Then three is Prince. And number four is Bruno Mars. Everything else doesn't matter. Okay? Now, Usher talks about when he was preparing for a Super Bowl performance, he talked about being inspired by him. And this is what he said. All of them start from Billboard. All of them start with an idea that the Super Bowl changed when Michael Jackson performed. I enjoyed Prince, Coldplay, Beyonce, Bruno Mars, Madonna. There are tons of things that I was able to pick up on, from looking at how they chose to enter to what they did while they were on stage and how they really chose to close. But the one that really stands out is Michael. Of course, Michael showed him how it's done. Usher did an interview with the Hollywood Reporter. I'm going to see, is that Usher talks about the advice Michael gave him, and so I'm going to go read to that part, okay? And I'm going to go ahead. And when he was doing the Super Bowl performance, it was to dedicate it to his 30-year career, and I remember that. I should have went. Sorry, dear career as a musician. Okay, so I'm going to go ahead and read it. Okay. On Bop, you reference a bunch of icons who have passed, including Aaliyah and Michael Jackson. Do you remember having conversations with Michael or getting advice from him? Yeah, it was a manifestation of what I do as an entertainer that he offered me. He didn't really say a lot. Whenever we had conversations, they were fairly brief. But what he did tell me was that he appreciated the fact that I am a song and dance man, and that the fact that it is not easy, it's not an easy thing to do. It is celebrated by people who did it and didn't have a choice when they were back in the early days. It was almost as though he was telling me to keep it authentic. And I battle with it because sometimes I actually want to have more support, so I add extra backgrounds and stuff like that. But it actually detaches me from the experience, so I want to have it with my fans and what I want to offer them. So that's why I always try to give my all when I'm singing. I try to stay away from the technical side of it and keep it as raw and authentic and analog as I possibly can. I do it to assist me. I don't use it to assess me. Okay, so that's what he said about it. So looks like an interesting article from that from the Hollywood Reporter. And in his actual performance, in the Super Bowl performance, he did a lot of ways to honor black artists. That was his goal. He wanted to really honor them. Marvin Gaye, Michael Jackson, Prince, the Jacksons, Teddy Pendergrass, himself. So Pi Bobby Brown. So it was really cool. The glove, the sequence, it was wonderful. I loved it. I enjoyed it. I was singing the songs because I'm a millennial and I grew up not just on Michael but Usher too. So it was great. Now, I want to make a theory. I thought that was weird that while Usher was doing what he was doing, he was a solo artist. He was solo. He did it himself. Why the media, mainstream media, kept talking about Taylor Swift and not Usher? It's about Usher. I know Taylor Swift was there because her boyfriend, Travis Kelce, played and won. I know that. But it's not about her. The Super Bowl performance, it's about Usher. That's what we're there to see. Why did that happen? This nonsense quote was wrong. With Taylor Swift in the $65,000 strong crowd at today's Super Bowl in Las Vegas, Usher couldn't have had any illusions about who had the greater superstar power and the media's attention as he hit the field for the halftime show. What a nasty ass. What a very nasty comment. And that's what I mean. If Taylor Swift really cared for artists and really cared for their shine, she could have stayed home and let Usher have his moment. But that's what they do. When they see that, they don't want to see it no more. And it goes to a theory I have. They don't want any more black male FBA. FBA stands for Foundational Black American Megastars ever again. They had Michael. And then when Michael did what he wanted to do, they was like, never again. They'd rather it be a white woman megastar, male or female, or a black woman megastar, regardless of what her lineage is. It will never be a black man whose his lineage is foundational black American, because they don't know what they don't want to celebrate them. They don't. So they say, okay, Usher might have his super performance, but we want to talk about Taylor Swift. So that's my theory. That's why they do it. And speaking of which, because of that, they think that she brought most of the ratings to the Super Bowl, but that's not true. The most watched Super Bowl is still not even her. It's Michael's. So they know what they're doing. It's this replacement. It's just, we don't want to support them. We want to support who we want to support. And it's not going to keep, it's going to keep being a mistake for them. But anyway, that's really it. You know, I have nothing else to talk about except those topics. I hope you guys enjoyed the episode. I hope you guys like what you hear. The next episode will be about, you guessed it, the sale that pissed off everybody in the majority of the fans in the fan community. I know it angered the crap out of me. So I was going to talk about it in this episode, but I said, you know what, this sale has to be talked about in a separate episode, because this sale angered me to the core and it made me rethink everything about being a fan in this fan community. And I'm starting to question a lot of stuff, because I read some stuff from fans that angered me so much that I really mean this. I don't know if I want to call these, I don't want to call these people fans. You know, I don't. So I have a lot to talk about. I'm gonna definitely work on that. It should be done by mid March, and then after that, I'm gonna do an interview with someone in the fan community that we all need to hear from. And then we'll see what episode I have after that interview. So I hope you guys enjoyed this one, this episode. You know, again, it's a lot of things going to be happening this year. Of course, the 50th anniversary of Michael's passing. What else? Off the Wall is 45 years this year. So a victory tour is 40 years ago. 1984, I mean, one of Michael's biggest years, is a big milestone year again. So let's see what we can do this year, hopefully. And of course, news of the biopic, of course, the stupid trial that you know, is going to be talked about. So what else is happening this year? So that's all I can think of. And this morning we'll talk about on the way there. As for the trial, it was a hearing. I have made it very clear I'm not going to follow the trial until we know when the trial starts. I'm convinced that this nonsense is not only a distraction, it's clear what's going on here. There's a lot of stuff going on that I'm finding out regarding what happened to Michael, and I'm gonna need MJ fans to start growing up in this fan community. We're going to be having a change because this biopic is getting Michael out there. Well, he's always out there, but he isn't going anywhere. He's extremely popular. I never seen something like this in my life. I never seen it. And I will say this. Michael's legacy is going nowhere. And it's going to be 2024 has already started off to be a year of revelations, and I think that is more to come. I think that a lot of people are going to be called out, and MJ fans need to get ready and start fighting back and stop this. We need to get the media on our side. We need to let the media go. The mainstream traditional media, the legacy media, is useless. Let me say it one time, useless to Michael's legacy. Period. So that's it. I hope you guys have a good day, and see ya. Bye.